You know what I'll do is I'll, while the little kids are leaving, I'll do my quick commercial. I really am not here to talk very much about Vision Ministries Canada, but some of you did receive this little piece as you were coming in. It's the newsletter that my organization produces. It has a little space on the back that says, "Welcome to us." If you want to get copies of this in the future, you're welcome to do that. I really am not here to talk much about it, but I should just say that what I spend most of my time doing is encouraging kinds of new things around Canada, especially new church plants. So they aren't all looking like good old-fashioned church plants. Some of them are just in people's homes. Some of them are new congregations that are attached to an existing church, maybe in the same building or some meeting somewhere else. And this talks a little bit about that work. It's been a neat year for Vision Ministries. We're alongside 23 brand new things in 2014, and we've just never helped that many church plants in the past. God is pouring people into our lives, and we have that many more, it looks like, maybe in the new year. And usually we've been helping 4 or 5 church plants across Canada. God is doing some good, interesting new things around the country. Happy to tell you about those. If you're interested in any of this, feel free to pin me after the talk. I'm glad to talk about that or anything else that comes up as I'm talking to you about the important stuff this morning. So it is good to be here. And it's been a while since I've been to Bethel, but I always love coming and visiting. I like my cool new thing that I'm wearing here. I was putting it on and I thought it was sort of a sportscaster look. And then my one of my nieces who's here said to me, "Well, no, it's more like a boy band." And I kind of like that, since it's been a long time since I've been a boy and I never could be in a band. But I am here to talk particularly about Christmas hope. And I find that kind of ironic because it seems to me that these are particularly hopeless times in the world these days. I mean, if you think about the big world, you'll recognize that in eastern Ukraine that there are lots of people who don't have hope right now, or in Syria and Iraq because of the Islamic State, whatever acronyms we use for that these days. Some of you will have heard this terrible thing that happened in Pakistan this last week with a bunch of little kids being killed by the Taliban. And those are just currently, admittedly, kind of hot spots in the world. Others are quickly forgotten when these new ones come in front of us. You know, Margie and I were in Thailand in the spring when martial law was imposed because a bunch of people were fighting and disagreeing with each other. We had to kind of sneak out of the country during curfew time, and we had to work out this kind of secret way to get to the airport when it was time for us to leave. And there's conflict and hopelessness in all other kinds of parts of the world. People dealing with Ebola or unrest or you name it. There's a lot of hopelessness in the world these days. A little positive aside, I heard Jeff Tunnicliffe, and I know Jeff has been a visitor here over the years quite regularly, I think. Jeff was in London and we were at the same church just 3 or 4 weeks ago. And Jeff was talking about a meeting that he just had with the Pope. Jeff these days is the head of the World Evangelical Alliance, and the Pope and the Vatican and the World Evangelical Alliance are talking about how Christians are going to respond to those terrible situations in the world these days. Now that's maybe a comment in itself that evangelicals and the Vatican are talking together, but you know what? There's one little positive thing. Of course, this isn't only in the world, right here in Canada. I loved filling up my gas tank with 77.9-cent gas the other day. But it made me think about the visit I'd had with a good friend in Calgary 2 or 3 days earlier, a sharp geophysicist, 40s kind of geophysicist. And he was saying that he was thinking that if he got through the week without being fired, that he probably wouldn't get fired till after Christmas because the company had already laid off all those different people. Now, you know, oil prices have kind of messed up the Canadian economy, and there's not much hope of it changing or getting fixed very quickly. not hope of a real quick turnaround. You know, some older folks here will know my wife Margie's grandparents. I know Margaret at least does. Grandma and Grandpa Letts, Nelson and Agnes, good folks, many, many followers of Jesus among their descendants, people I quite loved. Fewer would know Margie's other grandma. Her name was Grandma Teeny, Christina McDougall-Lyons. So she's the aunt of Janet McDougall, that some of you might know Janet, right? And that's Margie's grandma, is Janet's aunt, Grandma Teeny. I still remember being at Margie's folks for Christmas some years ago when Dad brought out his mom's, Grandma Teeny's, old date book, all dates brought together in a 1977 calendar. Here's the October 7 entry, and I think you'll see the slide of it there. She'd written this, right? In 1977, she wrote, "Mac died, 1963, the saddest event." You hear the kinds of hopelessness in Grandma's thinking there, 14 years after her oldest son had died. Even people of great grace and faith lose hope. Grandma was one of those people, right? She was someone who was so gracious and had such faith in God that I remember when she was about 65, she moved into the seniors' residence because there were so many lonely people in there that she thought she could be part of and be involved in their life. She was a person of grace and hope. But even people of grace and hope, grace and faith, lose hope sometimes, right? We do in our regular lives. I have friends with strong Christian faith in Surrey, BC, whose little 8-year-old daughter is going through the ravages of chemotherapy to try to beat leukemia. They're sad. And it makes me sad when I read the little updates, and of course I pray when I do, but you understand that in this world, in our world, in yours and my world, sometimes we're also people who lose hope. So I often think of winter and life in this world the way it's described by T.S. Eliot in a little poem that he kind of steals from Launcelot Andrews from hundreds of years earlier. Eliot calls his poem "The Journey of the Magi," right? And you can see this language. Just listen to how he describes winter and the world. He says, this is describing the wise men, the magi, coming to visit Jesus when he was a little boy. "A cold coming we had of it, just the worst time of the year for a journey, and such a long journey, the ways deep and the weather sharp, the very dead of winter," right? There's a kind of a something dark and hopeless about winter. At least I sure feel that, and I expect some of you do as well. We're in a little respite right now, but it's dark and it's kind of dismal, and it's a hopeless time of year. And yet here we are, almost to Christmas, something people describe as a season of hope, right? This is a time of hope. In fact, the traditional liturgical Christian Advent season, something our more formal brothers and sisters do, begins with lighting a hope candle. You know that little Advent wreath that sometimes people light? It starts with a candle that is about hope. Well, how could it be, in a world this dark and hopeless, for people far away like Pakistan or the eastern Ukraine, or near like any neighborhood in Canada, in a world hopeless even sometimes for people of faith and grace, how could it be that we can talk about hope? How right now in Alberta, as the dark season is arriving today? Well, I think we do partly because there's something about Christmas that seems to particularly engender hope in us, right? So here in the dark, with all the bad news, and maybe even the bad news in your life, there is something about Christmas that seems to be about hope. Now, do you remember the scene in Narnia? Right? Some of you know those C.S. Lewis Christian fairy stories, right? Listen to these words again from one of the beat up old copies we have of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, okay? So this is a scene where Lucy is talking to a beaver who can talk. Some of you know the stories. Those of you who don't, just get the point, okay? She says, the beaver talks about someone called the White Witch. And she says, Well, the White Witch, who's she? Why, it's she that has got all Narnia under her thumb. It's she that makes it always winter, and never Christmas. Think about that. How awful, said Lucy. I mean, think how hopeless the world would be without Christmas. Think of what it would be like if this wasn't here for us. We kind of hope against hope that Christmas really is true, don't we? And that some of the backstory as well, that there really is a God who has goodwill towards us. Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? That there was not only a God, not only is there Christmas, but there's a God behind it who actually is interested in human beings. Because that would be a truly hopeful thing. So what is the message of Christmas that gives us hope? What is it about Christmas? Have you ever spent a completely dark night, awake the whole night, just desperately waiting for the sunrise? Some of you probably have. My wife does that just about every night, I think. Or she wakes up at about 2 in the morning and is just waiting, hopefully, for the sunrise. But when I think of it, I remember back to being north of Toronto back in probably the 70s. I was a young guy, and I'd taken a bus from Toronto going towards where my folks were in Barrie, Ontario, just an hour and a half north of there. Some of you know that country. And the bus only went to Bradford, right? It just stopped, and they said, that's all we go today. And I think I hadn't noticed that when I bought the ticket, but there I was in Bradford, back then a little town, probably a giant city now, just north of Toronto, and I was at the main corner of Bradford, Highway 11, going north to Barrie. So I decided, well, I'll hitchhike the rest of the way. This was about 10 o'clock when I started, and I got out there on the corner, and I had my thumb out. I did that a little more in those days. But nobody was willing to pick me up. I had probably a pretty big beard then, and I had quite a bit of hair at the same time, and I probably wouldn't pick me up either. But there I was hitchhiking, and as I was there, I thought, the night is getting colder and darker every minute. About midnight, when the little coffee shop turned off its lights, there was like nothing left in Bradford but me and the cold weather right in December. It was a miserable night. And every time somebody came along, every 42 minutes, I'd put out my thumb again, and they'd ignore me again. And I remember my soul just getting darker and sadder and more lost, desperately hoping for the sun to come up. And when the light came on in the coffee shop at 6 a.m., that was a little bit of it. And then when 8:30, when the real sun came up, I thought, oh, maybe I'll live again. I went over to the coffee shop. I called my dad. I said, I'm coming, I'm coming. He said, no, I'll come and get you. I was so glad he did that. But that sense of being in the dark and just wanting the sun to rise is a little bit of what informs the Christmas story. The Christmas message is that a light actually shone into our darkness of lost hope and started a process that will illuminate the whole world and can illuminate our lives, my life. Listen to the light of the word of the world hope words in the Christmas story, right? And there's lots of them. First of all, we'll look at Zechariah in Luke chapter 1. Zechariah, remember, he's the father of Jesus' cousin, of the man called John the Baptist, and Zechariah haven't been able to have a baby, but the baby comes as a gift from God. And here's the little prophecy that Zechariah sings over his little son as he gives him back to God and tells him what his life is going to be about. Words, in fact, from God. So here they are from Luke chapter 1. He says, for you, child, will go on before the Lord to prepare the way for him, to give his people the knowledge of salvation through the forgiveness of their sins, because of the tender mercy of our God, by which the rising sun will come to us from heaven, to shine on those living in darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide our feet into the path of peace. He says, the tender mercy of God is going to have the rising sun come to us from heaven. to shine on those people living in darkness. Right? That's how he describes the baby being born in Bethlehem. The rising sun is coming into this world. Or just in the next chapter, there's an old man named Simeon. And Simeon is this guy who has been waiting around the temple, the Jewish holy place, right? He's been told from God, he's confident, that he's going to see the salvation of Israel. He's going to see Messiah. He's going to see the promised one who's going to rescue Israel. And then one day, Mary and Joseph arrive with little eight-day-old Jesus to kind of buy him back, to give him to God, and kind of buy him back with a little sacrifice of some turtle doves. And Simeon gets this baby in his hands, right? And he looks at him, and something clicks. He says this, "Sovereign Lord, as you have promised, you may now dismiss your servant in peace, for my eyes have seen your salvation, which you've prepared in the sight of all the nations, a light for revelation to the Gentiles and the glory of your people Israel." Simeon says, the light is shining here in this baby. The light has actually come into the world, right? This means salvation for everybody. All the non-Jews as well as the Jewish people, they're here. It's coming here in this baby. So the first Advent candle, the candle of hope, is also called the candle of expectation, or sometimes it's called the candle of prophecy, because it reminds the liturgical church that Messiah was promised, that the ancient Hebrews were looking for this light to come into the world. They were desperate for it, and that possibility weaves its way through Old Testament history and literature, right? It's all over the place there. As God's people are sort of abused by power-hungry kings and led astray by self-centered prophets and lulled into apathy by half-hearted religious leaders, there arose a longing among some of God's people that God would raise up a rescuer. They had hope that the Messiah would come. He said, he's going to come someday. God's going to bring a rescuer for us, bring someone who will bring salvation. And when you read the Christmas story, you know, sort of after 400 years of no ancient Hebrew prophet speaking anymore, these people were still looking and anticipating that this light would come and finally shine into the darkness, just like the prophet said he would. If you go right into the Christmas story, you know, into Matthew and Luke, where we know it best, right? And I'm just going to go to Matthew chapter 1 and 2 and pick and choose a few verses. But you can see that the prophecies are still there in everybody's mind. Right, so here's Matthew writing, and he says in chapter 1, verse 22 of Matthew, "All this took place to fulfill what the Lord had said through the prophet. The virgin will be with child and will give birth to a son, and they'll call him Emmanuel," which means God with us. Matthew's quoting Isaiah, the ancient Hebrew prophet. He's saying this happened because the prophet said it would. A few verses later in chapter 2, it says, "In Bethlehem, in Judea, the baby will be born. This is what the prophet has written in Micah 5. But you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you're tiny among all the thousands of Judah, out of you will come, you know, a baby who will rule my people Israel." Right? A few verses later, this is quoting Hosea, it says, "Jesus is taken by Joseph and Mary to Egypt. So was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, 'Out of Egypt I call my son.'" A few verses later, then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. "A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping in great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children because of what Herod did to the little children on the coast there." There's just this great anticipation that those ancient folks had. They were just desperately hoping that hope would come back in the world, that light would shine into the darkness. Just have a little aside here. I'm always intrigued by those Hebrew prophecies, and I remember reading from Peter Stoner. I dug it up out of an old sermon. Peter Stoner, 20 or 30 years ago, said, the chance of just eight of those prophecies happening in the life of one person, the chance of that little baby being born with all these prophecies happening in his life, born in Bethlehem, being called out of Egypt, all those kind of things happening. He says the chance of that happening, being fulfilled in the life of Jesus, is 1 in 10 to the 17th, or 1 in 100 quadrillion. Or, and he has a really neat metaphor, he says, take Texas, the state of Texas, fill it 2 feet deep in toonies. Now, Stoner said silver dollars, but we'll Canadianize it, right? He says, mark one of the toonies, stir it up really good into the big pile of all the rest of them, right? Get rid of this toonie, put on a blindfold, and the chance of you picking out the right toonie is the same chance as all those prophecies, just 8 of them, being fulfilled in the life of that baby that was born in Bethlehem, right? He says, this is just weird stuff. God had to have been involved in it. Now, from Matthew, you go to the Jesus biography we call Luke, and there's lots more prophecy language there. And you begin to hear the hope, right? You listen to Gabriel speaking, the angel who comes and talks to Zechariah and talks to Mary. And in Elizabeth and Mary in particular, you hear this wonderful language of hope. They say, it's going to happen. This thing that God promised about the Messiah is actually coming to pass. The light really is going to shine into this world. But that isn't our story, is it? That really isn't where we're at in our lives. We don't have that stuff happening. Here's Lucy Shaw in her little poem, For Who Can Endure the Day of His Coming. She says, one little verse, she says, in our nights, our complicated modern dreams rarely flower into visions. No contemporary Gabriel dumbfounds our worship or burning visits our bedrooms. No signpost satellite hauls us earthbound but star-struck half around the world with hope, right? We haven't had Gabriel appear to us and say, it's going to really happen. We aren't watching the star and saying, well, there's hope over there in Judea. There's something that's going to really happen. That's what happened to those people back then. It isn't what happened to us. I mean, hope in our world is more like sort of whistling in the dark, right? I mean, if you can work up enough hopeful feelings, it'll make you maybe feel good, but you're still in the dark, right? I mean, those things are still happening in Pakistan, right? There still are dark things happening in Alberta and in some of our homes, and if not this week, a week or two down the road, right? Unless hope is actually a real thing, and unless it's something we can really find because there's something real about it. Let me tell you about the fundamental nature of hope in the Bible, right? Because it isn't the way we usually think of it, right? I had a dream I told my son Luke about on Thursday night. I told him that I'd had a dream about winning the lottery. It was kind of a fun dream. I can't remember the details to regale you with, but I just remember waking up kind of pleasantly smiling, you know, none of the real stuff that happens when you win the lottery had happened yet in my dream, which is that you waste it all and lose it and you get in debt worse and all those kinds of things, but but I'd had that dream. But the truth is that when people talk about hoping that they'll win the lottery, right, they don't really mean, they're just meaning that they wish they would win the lottery, right? It's kind of wishful thinking. It isn't something actual real, right? In fact, most people know that the odds are always against you and the house always does win, right? That you just kind of wish it, but you don't have any actual hope. But in the Bible, hope is a stronger thing. We transliterate the Greek word for it as elpis, E-L-P-I-S. And what it means, hope in the Bible means, is a confident expectation that you completely know, that you actually know what's going to happen. You're not wishing it'll happen. That's not what biblical hope is. It's knowing it will happen. It's being certain of this. In fact, hope is the fundamental stuff of what we call faith that lots of us Christians believe we have, right? We have faith. Well, you know what? Hope and faith are completely tied together. The grandfather of all the followers of God, Abraham, who didn't really do much at all in the world, had faith. And that's what the Bible reminds us over and over again, that his faith was this thing that redeemed him in a sense, right? Abraham believed God. Abraham had faith in God, and that came to him as righteousness. It says that all over the Bible, quoting Genesis chapter 15. Now, Abraham in the story, this person who had faith, is characterized as someone who had hope over and over again. Let me read to you from Romans chapter 4. The background, remember, is that Abraham was given this special promise that he'd have many descendants, a nation worth of descendants would be come from him and his wife Sarah. And he was reminded of that when he was 100 years old. And he and Sarah, both infertile for all those years, still hadn't had a baby, right? So this is a paraphrase of Romans chapter 4 from the Message. And I'll just pick and choose verses out of here. It's probably kind of tiny up there. So listen to what it says here in Romans. When everything was hopeless, Abraham believed anyway, deciding to live not on the basis of what he saw he couldn't do, but on what God said he would do. And so he was made father of a multitude of peoples. Excuse me. Abraham didn't focus on his own impotence and say, it's hopeless, this 100-year-old body could never father a child. Nor did he survey Sarah's decades of infertility and give up. He didn't tiptoe around God's promise, asking cautiously skeptical questions. He plunged into the promise, and he came up strong, ready for God, sure that God would make good on what he had said. But it's not just Abraham, it's also us. The same thing gets said about us when we embrace and believe the one who brought Jesus to life when the conditions were equally hopeless. This is the stuff, right? This hope and faith that characterized those Old Testament prophets and prophecies. They usually had very little reason to believe, but they trusted what God said, and then it came to pass, right? And in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus, right? What God said would happen did happen, because it was God who was being trusted. When things were hopeless, they had hope, and they had faith, hope and faith tied together, and they believed God, right? They trusted what he said he would do. And of course, when the New Testament talks about faith, it's talking about a faith in God that makes sense because of a sacrifice, Jesus, who was brought back to life. Someone who was dead and buried completely in the dark, a completely hopeless situation. And that hope and trust in the crucified Jesus is even right there in the Christmas story. Let's go back to Simeon for just a minute. The old guy who was waiting for the baby, right? Remember Simeon. I read you his words about a light for revelation to the Gentiles. But he finishes his words to Mary by saying, but this child is also destined to cause the falling and rising of many in Israel, and to be a sign that will be spoken against, and a sword will pierce your own soul too. Right? It says, you know, this same little baby who's a light coming into the world, there's a lot of grief coming with this baby. I mean, lots of people are going to not like him. People are going to rise and fall because of this baby. And he says to Mary, and you're going to have a sword pierce your soul. Right? Simeon is prophesying that Jesus is going to die, and it's going to be terrible pain for his mother. Let me give you Lucy Shaw again in her poem, Simeon. And Lucy, of course, is an old Brethren girl, so I kind of like reading her once in a while. Someone from the heritage that some of us share. Okay, so this is Lucy Shaw talking about Simeon. Expectant, though never knowing quite what he was waiting, watching for, the old man had waited out the years of his long life to be in the right place at the right time. How many generations of crying babies brought by new parents into the holy precincts for dedication? How many innocent doves wrung by the neck for their blood and burned on the altar? Yet when they came with their child and their pigeons, And when the man Simeon, seized by the Spirit, took the infant in his arms, his eyes looked into the eyes of God. There was the flash of absolute knowing. So as the law decreed, he gave the child back to the master of the universe, singing for joy. Salvation now had come, and for grief, a sword was in his song. Here was the conclusion of Simeon's expectation. Here was the commencement of the offering. This little poem of Lucy's reflects the Bible and says that right there at the first Christmas, the light of hope is shining into the world. But for that light to fully come, for the hope to fully come, the baby was going to have to die. Right? That was what was there, and Simeon saw it, or God allowed him to. Now, I think a bunch of us here know, have had a kind of flash of absolute knowing that the child in the manger was God. Right? You've kind of gotten it all of a sudden. I think this is even true for a bunch of people who are here today who haven't had all their questions about Christianity answered yet. But you somehow know that there's something about this baby, that maybe the baby is the light of hope for your life. Well, my message to you, to all of us really, is to allow hope and faith into your life, right? Like Romans 4 says, what is written of Abraham is also written for us. We can be people of faith. We can have that kind of hope in our lives. That was true for him, and it's still true for people today. So hope tied to faith, helping to find faith, is available to us because faith's available. It's this kind of gift from God of a kind of confidence that Jesus didn't just come as a baby, but died and came back to life again. And faith allows us to embrace and believe the one who brought Jesus to life when the conditions were equally hopeless. So if you want to start exploring that faith and get some more grounded hope, not just kind of Christmas feeling, right? If you want real hope, not whistling in the dark hope, into your life, maybe beginning this Christmas, talk to me about it, okay, afterwards, or talk to someone who looks like they fit around here. They'll probably be able to give some kind of reason for the hope that is within them, or at least be able to point you to someone. And for all of us, those who claim to have faith in Jesus and those who don't, well, what's the rest of the message this morning? The message is that because of Christmas, we can hope against hope and never stop hoping. Why don't you stand up with me? I want you to do a little liturgy, a little piece of Lutheran liturgy by Dr. Stuart Gillen, Canadian guy. And I want you just to say it with me, okay? These are words of hope. And we're saying that that's what Christmas is about. So you can talk out loud, we'll say it all together, and then you can stay standing and I'll pray for us. And then George will tell me what to do or he'll be up here. Okay, say it together. Let all who are discouraged take heart in this light. It is both in suffering and in celebration that we hope. Let us not close ourselves to hope when it seems naive or is too painful, and let us refuse to call any place or time or person hopeless, for this is the light of Emmanuel, the reason for hope. Let me pray. Father, help us to grasp this well again today. We love the Christmas season, you know that. There are so many other good things that we enjoy, family, presents, good food. But sometimes, Father, when we stop and reflect a little bit, we realize that the world is just as dark the day after Christmas as it is the day before. Help us to understand that there is a place where we can have authentic kind of hope, that it can move into our lives, that it can fill us, that it can animate us. Father, you know we'll still have pain, you know we'll still struggle, but give us this kind of deep, rich hope that the child in the manger really was God, that the child in the manger came out of deep love for us and brought a kind of unending hope available. Father, bless us today. Thank you for the time to be together. Continue to glorify yourself in our lives. We pray in Jesus' name.